Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Today we'll talk about Bhava. If I can honestly say I'll be speaking from my realization, at least we can try and say something according to what it says in Shastra. So Rati or Bhava is the immature state of Sat, Chit, and Ananda. As practically speaking, we can just try and imagine a sakti where the mind, even if it temporarily withdraws itself from Krishna, immediately comes back. So from our own personal experience, we can see how difficult it is to fix the mind upon Krishna, and what to speak of having the mind not being able to withdraw itself from Krishna. So this is a condition where, as we'll find out at the end of the Madhurya Kandambini, at the state of Ruchi, meditation is devoid of other topics and is long-lasting. That's at Ruchi. And Ruchi is just one atom in the ocean of Asakti. And Asakti is one atom in the ocean of Bhava. So the state of Bhava, one's meditation is not only consistent and long-lasting, but very deep. That means, just like we can look outside and we see so many things, or at least we think we see so many things when we look out through our eyes. But one can see, by purification, one's vision becomes more vivid. As one's heart becomes purified, then one's senses becomes purified, as explained in the Bhagavad Gita, in the 6th chapter, yatra paramite chitam niruddha yoga sevaya yatra chaivatmanatmanam pashanatmani tushiti sukham atyandrikam yatat. That one enjoys himself with spiritual senses. One's senses becomes purified the more one engages in devotional service. The more the dust, the materialism is wiped from the heart, then the more one can see things as they are. But internally also, we have a television. So that television is now covered by materialism, and it's in disrepair. But under the guidance of the expert spiritual master and by following the principles, then the television becomes repaired, and one can actually see within his heart the pastimes of Krishna. And without, one can also see everything in relationship to Krishna. So this is, Bhava is a very intense stage where by the taste of ruchi, that is the spiritual senses, when one has ruchi, then everything he sees and experiences has some taste to it. There's nothing but taste for a person in the state of ruchi, especially when the ruchi is very deep. And asakti means attachment. That not only does he have a taste, but also there's deep attachment. But bhava is something special because the attachment becomes on the emotional platform also, more on the emotional platform. We can just see how when one becomes emotionally involved, how difficult it is, even in the material world, just by some emotional involvement, to forget the person, or how much entangled or attachment becomes by emotional involvement. So when one comes to the stage of bhava, then not only does he have taste, which everyone is hankering for in the material world, the ability to enjoy it every moment, but he's also attached. Because actually, naturally, whatever we take enjoyment from, then we also become attached to it. Whatever gives us pleasure, gives us attachment also. And what to speak of emotional pleasure and emotional attachment. So the state of bhava, the attachment becomes not only sensual, in the sense that one gets pleasure from all his senses, but the attachment becomes emotional. One realizes how nice Krishna is. Now we may talk about Krishna. We may be able to appreciate a little bit about Krishna's qualities or his pastimes, or we may even have some faith that there is a Krishna. But still at the stage of bhava, one actually experiences just as how Krishna, just as he's unlimited, so he's also unlimitedly nice. And one feels the sense of possessiveness starts to develop at that stage. So here it mentions that the outer luster of bhava is its rarity, sudurlava. So we've mentioned that there are six different, Rupa Goswami defines that there are six different qualities of pure devotional service, beginning with it relieves from all, relief from all material distress. At the very beginning. Beginning with Shraddha. What's the other one? From Shraddha? All auspicious. Auspicious. But it develops auspicious quality. So this is at the stage of Shraddha. But it's not that these stop, but they begin to manifest themselves even at the stage of beginning practice. But it's rarity. And the other, sudurlava, and the other, what's the other one? Moksha laga kriti. Moksha is insignificant. So this is at the stage of rati of bhava. It's very rarely achieved, and moksha is insignificant. So sometimes it's difficult. It says that there are four classes of men who come to devotional service. So until one actually comes to pure devotional service, it's very difficult for us to actually even appreciate sometimes how we're attached to these four different qualities, how we're attached to the relief from distress, how we're desiring some security, how we're inquisitive to understand about philosophical, you might say, how we need direction, or how we're doubtful to some degree, what's to be done. And, of course, the last one, he is searching for knowledge of the Absolute. So that's a good quality. But at the stage of bhava, one even takes the idea of liberation as insignificant. Liberation from all ignorance, which automatically solves the one searching for knowledge, the last one. What to speak of distress or security. One actually realizes that he's an eternal being, unaffected by matter. There's no question of ignorance. There's no question of distress or insecurity, or one is not doubtful anymore. So at the state of bhava, it goes way beyond these things, because one is actually immersed in an ocean of transcendental happiness and an ocean of transcendental awareness. One's senses become perfect at that stage, uncontaminated by the different faults of material existence, such as making mistakes or cheating or imperfect senses, etc. So, and it's very rare, because practically everyone in this material world is very rare, even sudurlava, very rarely achieved. So it simply waits for prema for the last two. The only means to attract Krishna. What's the last one? Is the only way to attract Krishna? What's that? It gives one all spiritual pleasure. That is inconceivable spiritual pleasure. Because Krishna is Rasa Vaisaha, he is pleasure, and Srimati Radharani is Ladini Shakti personified. So you combine them together, it's quite inconceivable. Yes?
You said that in the stage of bhava, one becomes once free from the four conditions?
Yes.
So,
the four defects.
The four defects.
Condition.
So, how do we understand that in the sense of somebody, let's say, who wears glasses, this or that? I mean, that's...
Spiritual glasses or material glasses?
No. Or even, for instance, imperfect senses. Could that mean also the limitation of the senses, whereas when one has a spiritual body, then one can do the one sense?
This body is a machine. Just like you may become liberated from the conception of identifying yourself with your car, but that doesn't mean you get a better car necessarily, or the car becomes perfect. You can do anything. So that means that the person, if he sees anything, he sees it in relationship to Krishna. So he sees everything properly. Whether he sees every detail, that depends upon Krishna. He doesn't cheat, because he has a perfect relationship with Krishna. Except without establishing our relationship with Krishna properly, there's always the possibility of cheating. Cheating mentality, that I am the enjoyer, that I am the controller. As far as not committing mistakes, he does everything in relationship to Krishna. Therefore, there's no mistake in whatever he does. It doesn't mean that he forgets a verse or that he doesn't wear glasses. This is something that's external. But internally, the soul himself, he surrendered to Krishna. So how Krishna decides to manifest his activities, that's up to Krishna. Krishna may utilize him in different ways to prove different things. But as far as externally, material sense is becoming perfect, now the body is a machine. Sometimes there'll be, some bodies may work perfectly, they may not work perfectly. But if they work in relation to Krishna, that's their perfection. When the sense is utilized in the service of Krishna, that's perfection. But he sees everything perfectly in relation to Krishna, so that's perfect vision. Yes?
There's a nice description in Nectar of Devotion. It's also in the CC, the 22nd chapter of Rajaneela. There's about 9 or 10 qualities of a person, starting with he doesn't waste any time at all.
It will go over the Virakta Nishunyataha, Ashabanda Samukhanga, Sara Gana, Sara Namagadas Yushi. So the first one is Shantir Avyakta Kaladvam, Virakta Manishunyataha. So there are different symptoms. These are known as Anubhava, or symptoms that come from this being in the state of Bhava. So those are symptoms describe Nectar of Devotion and Chaitanya Charitamrita. These are Anubhava, the subsequent manifestations by which we can see. First one is Shantir, which means more or less peacefulness. Actually, Shantir means forgiveness, so without being forgiving, you can't be peaceful either. Shantir Avyakta Kalajvam. Shantir Avyakta Kalajvam. So, he doesn't waste time. Doesn't waste any time. That is, he sees everything in relation to Krishna, and therefore he's always very peaceful. He knows everything should be utilized in Krishna's service, and he knows Krishna is the controller, and he knows that whatever Krishna does is for everyone's benefit, therefore he's always peaceful. He always utilizes his time in devotional service. Avyaktika, Shantir Avyaktika Alajvam, Viraktir, he's detached from all material enjoyment because he has all spiritual enjoyment. Virakta Manashunyataha. Mana, and his mind is devoid of pride. Asha Bandha, he's very hopeful. Samudkanda, and eager to obtain Krishna. Nama Gane Siddharuchi. And he always has a taste for chanting the holy name.
What was the Sanskrit for
this? Actually, I usually don't get that one right. I get it mixed up. I get it word order, sometimes reverse. It's always Siddha, Nama, and it's somehow, the four words are, I don't know what order they're in. It's Nama, Siddha, Gada, and Ruchi. So whether it's Sada, Gada, Sada, Nama, Gada, Ruchi.
Nama, Gada,
Siddha, Ruchi. Nama, Gada, Siddha, Ruchi. He always has a taste for chanting. And then he always likes to hear about Krishna's transcendental pastimes. Asaktistad gunakine, pritistad vashatistale. And he always has an attraction to living in a place where the Lord had his pastimes, or has his pastimes. So these are the symptoms of one who's achieved the state of bhava. What is the next word?
After iti adayo.
Iti adayo. Bhava yasyur, and then jata, bhavankures stale,
jane.
So these are symptoms. We have to understand it's not very easy to imagine how deep is the consciousness in Krishna consciousness at this particular stage. We can only imagine it according to our particular level of advancement or whatever mercy Krishna has given us by experience. But here one is actually able, as we'll find out, to experience directly Krishna. In the part of the description here, actually, we'll just read this, some of the descriptions here. By its profuse release of its fragrances, the flower of bhava invites Madhusudana and makes him appear there. So the living entity, the soul, he has a certain amount of ladini shakti because his body is spiritual also. So spiritual means satchit and ananda with vigor. So the soul also has a certain amount of internal energy of sattvit and ladini, knowledge and pleasure. So when that knowledge and pleasure potency of the soul comes in contact with the unlimited pleasure potency of Krishna, the chit shakti, then it becomes animated or enlivened. And Krishna can taste the ladini shakti of the soul and becomes attracted to it, just like as it says here. Moreover, by the profuse release of its fragrances, the flower of bhava invites Madhusudana and makes him appear there. Someone can read this? Go to read, Jameson? Chapter 7.
In the state of bhava, simply by the first fragrances, all the emotions of the heart, like a cluster of sesame seeds, liquefy into perfumed oil and become immediately fit to smear on all the limbs of the world.
So this is a little poetic. This. Okay.
At the appearance of bhava, even the chandala becomes worthy of respect that is due to Lord Brahma. At that time, his eyes, full of longing, turned towards Krishna to lick the blackness of his limbs, the rosy hue of his lips and eyelids, the white brilliance of his moon-white teeth shining in his smiling face, the yellow hue of his clothing and ornaments begins to bathe his body in a limbs of tears.
So this is the when the senses become purified, everything, one can experience everything through the purified senses. That everything has a certain amount of pleasure and taste to it in connection to Krishna. So one can taste the yellowness, as it says here, Krishna's dhoti, or the redness of his lips. They used to have, when they, I remember when I was going to college in the early 60s, they used to have these propaganda about LSD, how you can taste sound and smell this. But so actually this is the transcendental, this is the experience that everyone's looking for. And you have pure spiritual senses and all of them become interchangeable. You can hear the sound of Krishna's lips much better than hearing the sound of one hand clapping.
Like a hunted animal here and there from time to time, freezing his motion, he raises his ears to try to hear the sound of Krishna's flute, the jingling of his anklets, the sweet intonation of his voice, the messages of his wandering footsteps. And his body erupts in ecstasy while experiencing the long-form touch of the Lord's tender hand.
So what we're trying to imagine, utilize our imagination, according to our adhikari, according to our dessert, Krishna is reciprocating with us and giving us some experience according to that imagination. Actually, the whole material creation is based upon imagination. But the wrong kind of imagination, everyone here is trying to imagine that they're the Lord and the enjoyers here. But in Krishna consciousness, we're trying to imagine things in relationship to Krishna, and Krishna supplies the necessary intelligence, which gives us the type of experiences that we have, either in devotional service, or for the karmis, they also have a certain type of experience due to their desires of sense gratification. But here, the reality of Krishna consciousness and our experience becomes perfect. That is that one actually comes directly in contact with Krishna, and therefore all one's senses become perfectly spiritualized. Well, now Krishna can only reveal himself to our senses in proportion to our spiritual advancement. But at that stage, everything is actually experienced as it actually is. So it's not that one is imagining Krishna, but actually, or that here in the material world everything becomes fuzzy or vague, but actually everything becomes perfectly seen. Just like I remember one time when I was in Boston, 1969, December of 69, I went from New York to Boston with some devotees because Prabhupada was going to go there. And right before Prabhupada had come up to give the lecture that morning, it was Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Prabhupada's disappearance day. Could you tell them to leave? So Prabhupada had come from the airport. I remember he walked up the steps, and right before that I was noticing that there was this picture of Lord Chaitanya. It suddenly became very live to my perception. Lord Chaitanya became very live, and Prabhupada walked up the steps, and suddenly the whole atmosphere turned into Vaikuntha, because I could definitely notice the difference in my consciousness. Since everything, there was no anxiety, it was just like everything was completely beautiful and peaceful. And then Prabhupada paid obeisances to the picture of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Prabhupada. And he walked over to his Vyasa son, and then he looked me in the face. And I was like completely amazed, because Prabhupada was so effulgent. And at the same time, I could understand that he could see everything completely perfectly. His vision was completely beyond normal vision. So it's not that a person becomes spaced out or he flies in the, but actually he understands everything perfectly well, and he knows how to act perfectly in harmony with what's going on. So becoming Krishna conscious, sometimes in Vrindavan or in other parts of India, especially this conception that when one becomes spiritual, he becomes somewhat inept at material things. An avaduta. He walks into buildings. He doesn't know whether he's on land or the sea or in the air. He doesn't know but Prabhupada was the exact opposite. So that's actually actual spiritual vision, is when one becomes completely conscious of things as they actually are in relationship to Krishna.
His nostrils open wide again and again and inhale, anxious to examine the fragrance of his body. Hankering to taste the Lord's saliva, his tongue feels great joy in retaining that taste and licks his lips. Sometimes, gaining the association of the Lord by the Lord's whim, his heart feels exhilarated and becomes drunk with the abundance of sweetness. And then at the departure of the Lord, he grieves and becomes despondent. In this way, the symptoms of Sankara Vibhava decorate his body. His intelligence in the states of wakefulness, sleep, and deep sleep turns to fix itself without deviation on the path of remembrance of Krishna.
So just trying to imagine how when you're deeply asleep, you're determined to remember Krishna. So try and think about how determined we were last night in trying to remember Krishna. So this gives one some idea of the intensity of devotional service at this particular stage, that even at the stage of deep sleep, one is actually Krishna conscious, even at that stage. So for such a person, there is no really sleep.
At the time of attaining his spiritual body suitable for performing his eternal service, the indestructible soul enters that body.
What does it mean it enters the body? Does that mean he's apart from the spiritual body and entered into it?
I always understood that the spiritual body at this point is in like a seed form, which is called the spirit soul, and that at this point it will actually manifest.
Yeah, so one becomes actually aware of one's spiritual identity. In other words, we are already that spiritual. We are that spiritual body. Whatever we're experiencing, we experience ultimately through our spiritual body. There's no question of experiencing through the material senses alone, because the soul is what's experiencing in the body. But its experience is distorted by the impurity of the material senses and mind and intelligence. But when they become purified, then the direct experience of the soul is there. The soul experiences directly, unimpeded by its contaminated mind, by any mind, senses, or intelligence. And at the same time, his body, his spiritual body, becomes fully manifest. Yes.
And the spiritual body has those qualities of the soul, such as
the spiritual body is the soul.
So why does it say here, the indestructible soul enters that body?
Yeah, it's just the translation. And there's, you can use your imagination what it means by enters. It just becomes, it manifests itself fully. Instead of its consciousness entering into the material body, it's just the consciousness of the soul is completely... That's not even... But it's no longer in material consciousness. It's in pure spiritual consciousness.
So, my prior question, so at this point, I think you said that the devotee... The senses are not limited in any way because
they are limited. Our senses are always limited.
They're
limited
by the spiritual body. The
senses of the spiritual body are limited too. We're not Krishna. Therefore, they're as limited or unlimited as Krishna allows them to be. It becomes purified. Qualitatively, we become the same senses as Krishna. But quantitatively, we're always very tiny. But Krishna can allow the tiny soul to experience presently and limitedly, just as he did with Arjuna by showing the universal form. But that doesn't actually. But actually, that was a lowering of Arjuna's vision. When Krishna just did that digressively. When Krishna showed Arjuna the universal form, it says he gave him divine eyes. So are those divine eyes better than the eyes he had before? You think so, Andrew?
Not necessarily, of course.
Excuse me?
Not on a material level, but on another level, yes.
Actually, anyone else have another opinion? What's up?
With this, the eyes he had before, he was able to see Krishna personally in his two-handed form.
That must be in the Bhagavad Gita overview class. Yeah, good. He gave him celestial eyes, which means that his vision went lower. He was able to see like the demigods. Because before he could see Krishna, he saw Krishna in his personal form, so that's the best eyes he can get. Can't do better than that. But in any case, when senses become spiritualized, which means that there's unlimited as Krishna allows them to be. That's not now too, but they become, they're able to see spirit though. Anyone else have a question? Yes?
So the nature of an advanced devotee, is that your nature, or what are the similarities between his nature and his constitutional nature?
You mean what his personality is like?
Yeah.
Flexible. He's very flexible. Just like from this material personality that we have is just a reflection of our spiritual personality. So Krishna can utilize when the soul becomes completely Krishna conscious, he can act in any way Krishna wants him to act. He becomes a perfect instrument for Krishna. So although he may have a form, say, of a gopi, but that form of a gopi is not our limited conception of acting as a mundane lady in the material world, a mundane woman. But it's unlimited. I mean, unlimited in the sense, much more diverse than we can imagine. So just like whatever one's relationship with Krishna is based upon pure love, but pure love means with all the emotions also. And an ability to act perfectly under any circumstance and display the proper emotion and the proper attitude, the proper mentality, just appropriate for that circumstance. So he can take any role in the material world. Is that clear? Just as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, in the past times, he took the role of Lakshmi Devi, of the god of Mahalakshmi in the play. And everyone became completely enchanted by his taking the role of Mahalakshmi. But that doesn't mean that was the only role he could have played. He could play any role. Matter of fact, he is playing every role. So similarly, the soul, at that particular stage, Krishna, after all, the soul is not exactly the doer. And therefore, although the soul may be experiencing a certain relationship with Krishna on the spiritual platform, Krishna can utilize his material body, mind, and senses, and intelligence in any way he wants. So he may act in a completely different way on this platform. Is that clear?
I think I understand. Just so then, the finer qualities of one's material personality, there are similarities between that. And I mean, once refined, that also gives us an indication of the true spiritual nature.
Well, when our heart becomes purified and we become more and more utilized as an instrument for Krishna, we act more and more exactly appropriately to fulfill Krishna's mission in whatever we're doing here in the material world. In other words, the more conscious one becomes, the more he can act appropriately. So one becomes perfectly conscious, and he has all potencies to do whatever Krishna wants him to do. As it says, Narada Muni, all his senses became separately enlivened in transcendental ecstasy, and they became just appropriate to fulfill the mission of Krishna. So it's perfectly refined. Because he doesn't do anything except for service to Krishna. And he has all ability to serve Krishna. And on the spiritual platform he's in Krishna's pastimes there also. Just like here, we can be acting one way externally, then internally we may be doing something else. So a perfectly self-realized devotee, he can see how Krishna is utilizing him as an instrument here. And because Krishna is acting on the basis also of the desire of the devotee, therefore it's a perfect relationship. in this sense, just like Vasudev died. He wanted to accept all the sinful reactions of all the conditioned souls in the world and suffer in hell, and that everyone else would go to the spiritual world. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said that that's not necessary, that simply by seeing the desire of the soul, of the pure devotee, then Krishna will fulfill that desire. So even this, we can say that the super soul is directly in charge of all his activities, but even the super soul's, how the super soul manifests the activities of the pure devotee also depends upon the desire of the pure devotee. Did I lose everyone? In other words, just like now we're looking out through these eyes and experiencing. So our experience is not, it has nothing, in one sense, well, I'll give a quote from Bhagavad Gita. It says, the material nature is the cause of all activities and effects, and the living entity is the cause of the various sufferings and enjoyments in the material world. So we're not the doer of anything in this material world independently. We may have our part to play, but our part has a lot to do with our desire. So, and our desire has a lot to do with our experience, both our immediate experience and our intelligence, which depends upon previous experience. So when we're experiencing something, that generates a certain amount of desire, depending upon our intelligence and other factors, but primarily intelligence. And that creates a certain desire within us, and that desire means that Krishna will manifest some activity in the future on the basis of that desire. Is that clear? So similarly, that relationship between the soul and Krishna is not stopped at the time when one becomes perfectly Krishna conscious. What it means is that one's desire has become dovetailed with Krishna's perfectly. And Krishna, not only that, but on the highest stage, Krishna becomes surrendered to the devotee. So that practically speaking, every desire of the devotee, Krishna wants to fulfill. He's anxious to fulfill. Except if somehow or another the devotee comes up with some desire that Krishna knows would not be very good for him, then Krishna may not fulfill that desire. But in any case, although Krishna controls everything, still he's not doing it completely outside the desire of the devotee or even the persons in this material world. So here in the material world, the perfectly realized soul is conscious, and his activities depend somewhat upon his desire as a result of that consciousness of the material world. But inside himself, he's absorbed in Krishna's pastimes. And even the highest devotee, he's directly participating in them. Yes.
So, in this stage of when the devotee is relating with Krishna, then he's doing so, obviously, with the spiritual body. At the same time, I've heard it said that the devotee, he cultivates this mood to the point that he can be in that mood 24 hours, even internally, even though externally he may be.
The soul separates from his real body.
Right. So my question is, when the same devotee is preaching, externally he's taking the mood of a Madhyamanakara for preaching, but internally he simultaneously he may be engaged in his relationship with Krishna in the spiritual body.
Yeah, of course.
When he's doing that, he's Uttamadhikarni. So is it to say that he can be acting on both platforms at the same time,
yeah,
Uttamadhikarni internally, and then externally he's just chastising something?
Externally his activities are directed by Krishna. As we read in the Madhurya Kundamini in the beginning, that even for a pure devotee, the Supersoul still directs his activities. Uh-huh. So the Supersoul informs him how to play his role perfectly well. But we have then the consciousness of the Uttama Adhikari chastising someone is not a mundane consciousness.
Yeah.
It's completely spiritual. He knows, it's like Krishna, he himself, he knows that in order to help the soul come back to the spiritual world, sometimes he has to chastise him. And that's coming through the material energy. So the spiritual master, for instance, sometimes he'll chastise his disciple. Just like one time Prabhupada was sitting with Navayogendra Swami here in Vrindavan, and he asked for his servant to come, and his servant wasn't there, the person was watching the door. So then he called for him. When he came in, "You rascal, you fool!" And Prabhupada really got on his case. And the person, the devotee, was shaking. His Prabhupada was pretty powerful, very angry. And then he left. And Navayogendra Swami, and he began to shake. And Prabhupada eventually explained that, you know, this is the mercy of the spiritual master. You know, there's so many people out there, they're doing so much nonsense. But here, you know, this devotee had left without, whimsically, without doing his duty, and Prabhupada chastised him. So Prabhupada took special concern for this person so that he becomes inspired to do his duty. But if he said, "Oh, everything's the one, everything's all right," you know, then no one would learn anything.
So my question is, simultaneously, he's manifesting his ability to discriminate on the Mahjong platform and lack of discrimination on the Uttama platform, both
things. There's discrimination on the Uttama platform, too. Without discrimination, you can't do anything. It's not Mayavadi. Uttama doesn't mean you become a Mayavadi and see everything as one.
No, I mean discrimination in his vision. Because it's said that the Uttamadikara in his vision to others, he's seeing that everybody's engaged in the service of Krishna. He's seeing that others are more engaged than he is.
Right.
But in the Madhya platform, he's discriminating that this is a non-devotee.
He discriminates. An Uttamadikara can discriminate also. He sees different levels of advancement of devotees. He sees everything perfectly. So he can also judge who's on what level. He just thinks he's on the lowest level.
But it's like that he sees others engaging in Krishna service.
Yeah, he sees everyone engaging more than he is. That doesn't mean he thinks the dog is a very advanced devotee. In other words, when it says that he sees that due to his humility, he thinks that everyone else is engaged except for him. But he can discriminate between an exalted pure devotee, a demigod, and a dog. He sees how their souls. But he knows that this person got a dog body because he's not a very advanced, he's not very surrendered to Krishna. He's not following Krishna's instructions, therefore he got a dog body. But he just thinks he's lower than a dog, that's all. And that if he is able to do anything, it's by the mercy of his spiritual master. So he surrendered, therefore he can act appropriately following the directions of the spiritual master and Krishna. But he doesn't become puffed up thinking that he's become very intelligent. He just thinks that he surrendered. He knows he had it. He surrendered. And as far as discrimination, Krishna gives him all ability to discriminate, especially the Uttama Adhikara. He sees everything perfectly. So he can judge exactly who's on what level of devotion. It's not that he becomes a fool and sees everything as one. No, that's a Mayavadi. That's the lowest. He sees everything much more perfectly. It's just that if you ask, just like generally, one can see everything else except for himself. Or we should say, the thing that we're most bewildered or deluded about is our own self. So on the spiritual platform, it's true too. One thinks that he's the lowest, although he becomes the highest. The difference is that the greater we think and we are in the material world, the lower we become. The more we become deluded to think ourselves important, then the lower we become. And the more we become deluded to think ourselves insignificant on the spiritual platform, then the more exalted we become. But are you raising your hand, Dr. Tracy?
I was just wondering, for a while, I this is a little bit different from what I was explaining to the emphasis is on Krishna. But in the Harinam Chaitanya, he describes, and like we've been discussing also in other classes about the Manjaris who are, they don't desire to associate with Krishna alone, they just desire to search for the Radharani and their focus and attention is her. So I was wondering, for a soul who has that relationship internally with Sri Radharani, when they advance through these different levels, will the focus rather than be, you know, hearing Krishna's ankle bells and parent Krishna's fruit, will it be focused on Srimati Radharani and seeing Srimati Radharani and interacting with her?
That's automatically understood. In other words, the one in the spiritual world, it's not that one has a separate relationship between Radha and Krishna. In other words, one experiences Srimati Radharani, one experiences Krishna through Krishna's relationship with the other. Prabhupada once, as he writes in teachings of Lord Chaitanya, Krishna by himself is not so attractive, but when he expands his internal energy with his devotees, then he becomes very, very attractive. So that's another way of saying the same thing. To experience Krishna directly is not, I can't really say what it's like. But to experience Krishna through his devotees, through the experience of his devotees, that's unlimited. Especially, just for instance, even in our state, we're trying to, by following Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's movement, that anxiety to experience Krishna, with which Krishna himself reciprocates according to our anxiety to see him. So we're actually learning to develop that anxiety through experiencing the anxiety of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his followers to see Krishna. Just like Prabhupada, this whole movement was based upon Prabhupada's anxiety to have a movement, to push it on. And it continues through those devotees who, by their association with Prabhupada, have developed a similar type of anxiety to some degree and are trying to follow on to capture or to try to become dovetailed with that anxiety of Prabhupada for this Krishna consciousness movement. And ultimately goes back to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who's a manifestation of Srimati Radharani's anxiety to see Krishna or to serve Krishna. So our whole experience, even now, is really not independent. It's all in relationship with the devotees. And now Krishna is reciprocating with us as devotees because of that association with other devotees. In other words, our standing in Krishna consciousness depends upon our surrender to the other devotees and our ability, therefore, to experience what they're experiencing. And Krishna reciprocates accordingly. Anything else about this? So we'll stop here, and then tomorrow we'll go on to we'll finish Bhava, and we'll go on to Prema. Yes.
I want to say something else, maybe that in relation to this, that in Italian people accept that the divine phenomena reside, nature resides in one body. So at what point does the demoniac nature
As soon as we surrender. Now we're only bothered by our minds and our senses. There's the idea that sometimes we fall under of becoming the Lord and enjoying it. But at the stage of nishtha prakriti, it doesn't disturb us so much at that stage. At the stage of bhava, it becomes just a shadow, like a dream. Oh, not even before that. The state of asakti becomes just like a dream. And the state of bhava just becomes like a shadow. It doesn't really affect.
So it's always there as long as the relationship is there.
Right. That's why it's there. It's not as always there because the relationship with the material body is there. But our relationship with the material body is there because of our attachment to that idea. We have a relationship with the material body because of our attachment to that idea. So Maya, knowing our attachment, continuously feeds us with that idea, with those ideas. But as we become detached from those ideas, then Krishna just takes it away. But as long as we have some, even the smallest attachment, then Maya feeds us with that attachment. But as soon as we give it up, then Krishna takes it away. As soon as Krishna can perceive that the soul is no longer attached to that idea, then he takes it away and reveals himself further. Or we should say, by revealing himself further, also he takes that idea away. Okay, thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada.